Hi, I'm Marlena, and I want to welcome you to Marlena, right here on ACB Radio Mainstream, where for about the next 60 minutes or so, we'll be taking your calls at 1-866-666-7926. Come on in, sit down, take your shoes off, give me a call, won't you? Hello and welcome to Marlena. My guest this week is Deborah Kendrick, who is an award-winning journalist, editor, columnist, and poet. Her weekly column, Alive and Well, began in the Cincinnati Inquirer in 1986, added the Columbus Dispatch in 1993, and was syndicated by King Features in 2000. It has won numerous awards from both journalistic and advocacy organizations, including the Society for Professional Journalists, the Association of Women Communicators, the Cincinnati Editors Association, the National Easter Seal Society EDI Award, the AFB Access Award, American Occupational Therapists Association, the Inclusion Network Lifetime Achievement Award, and many others. And Deborah is also a recipient of the very prestigious ACB Vernon Henley Media Award. In 1985, Deborah founded Tactic, an international quarterly publication, which I'm sure many of you will remember, dealing with assistive technology for people with visual disabilities. For 15 years, her magazine enjoyed a worldwide readership, and it also received numerous awards. The magazine was purchased by the American Foundation for the Blind in 1999 in order that AFB could launch Access World, for which Deborah is a senior features editor. Deborah makes her home with her three children in Ohio and is someone whom I have known now for many years, but have actually met, known in person, if you will, for about 5 years. Deborah Kendrick, welcome to Marlena.
Well, thank you so much, Marlena. I'm a little sick of myself already here.
You know,
thank you for a very nice introduction.
I was looking at the information that you sent, and believe it or not, listeners, I've actually left some things out. I mean, we actually could have gone on and on and on and on, but it is so great to have you, and I need for everyone to know that Deborah came with very short notice to our program, so I especially say thank you to you for doing that.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
Can you tell us a little bit about your background? And well, let's start with, have you always enjoyed writing from the time you were a child?
I have. I remember telling adults when I was about 8 years old that I wanted to be a writer when I grew up. And as kids will do, I shifted gears a time or two and wanted for a long stretch somewhere in there to be a teacher. But when I was ready to go to college and got money from what in my state is called the Bureau of Services for Visually Impaired, I had a counselor, believe it or not, who was blind himself, who said that a blind girl couldn't be a writer. And to be a writer was immature and unrealistic, and if I would cling to that goal, he would not give me money for college.
Wow.
So I changed my plans, ostensibly, and said that I'd be a teacher. The irony was I never took a single education course, but I did, in fact, teach for a while. I taught college English and worked for a while as a rehab teacher for blind people and did some things with blind children and so forth. And I never gave up wanting to be a writer. And it was our very own Dialogue magazine that published my first article. I was in the throes of domesticity, and I had babies and was staying home raising gardens and making bread. And I wrote an article about making these really cool bread dough ornaments for Christmas. And Dialogue published it. And not only did they publish it, but Louise Kimbrough, bless her heart, looked me up, and she found me at a Ski for Light event and took me to lunch and said, as talented as you are, I'm sure that you write for a lot of national magazines, but if you have any more time for us, we'll always appreciate it. That was the gift. It was the gift of 25 years, and it'd be wonderful if Louise was listening to know that she gave that to me, although I have told her. But it gave me the confidence, and so I started selling stories everywhere that I could.
And that's, of course, where I first remember hearing of Deborah Kendrick was way back in the old Dialogue days, and when it was done in Berwyn, Illinois. And
yeah,
remember that? Oh man. And I always looked forward to your stories and your articles and so on in Dialogue. So give me a little bit of a picture. How did we get from an article about making bread dough ornaments in Dialogue up to the senior features editor in AFB's Access World?
Well, I did. You have to do some pretty strange things to pay your dues in the world of freelance writing, because the catch-22 is to get assignments, you have to have clips, and to have clips, you have to get assignments.
And what's a clip? What's a clip?
A clip is a hard copy original of a published piece. So when today, when I send a proposal to a magazine, I enclose usually two, but you can, you know, put one or two or three samples of originals of articles I have published elsewhere, usually that are somehow related to what I'm proposing. It's the calling card of sorts of the freelance writer to say, here, you see, someone else thought I was worth publishing. So I did a lot of, you know, as all of us do, we're doing a lot of things all at once. It wasn't any linear path, and certainly not a hard and fast plan, because I'm not that much of a planner, but I was doing a lot of volunteer work, and one of my favorite organizations was the Radio Reading Services in Cincinnati, and I worked on fundraising, and with the fundraising was public relations, and that meant writing press releases and brochures and newspaper articles, and I was doing it all gratis. I was doing it for an organization I loved, and it started dawning on me that every time I sent anything to the local papers, they were printing every word. And then just little by little, listening to more people, I thought, I should try to sell an article here. And so I did. And the other irony is that, of course, no one, your name isn't on a press release. And you don't get a byline if you're writing an article for a community paper about your favorite charity. So none of the readers knew that that work was mine. But it gave me the confidence to start pitching articles. And when I did, the irony was that nothing ever had to do with disability. I was terrified of writing about disability in the mainstream, because I thought that it would ruin me, that it would pigeonhole me, and I'd never be able to do anything else. So I wrote about politicians and social justice issues, child abuse and prison inmates, and a number of other things. And I sold all my articles for about 3 years over the phone, through the mail. Never met an editor other than good old Louise. It was okay that she knew I was blind.
And she was herself, yeah.
So one day, I can't quite remember how this came about, but I guess talking to another writer, I got the idea that I needed to go face-to-face with one of my editors. So I made an appointment with an editor that I'd written for here in Cincinnati, a magazine editor, and said, I'm going to be in the neighborhood, and I'd like to drop in and talk ideas. And, of course, it was a very, for me, it was a tr- trip that I had to talk myself into for 3 days. It was just downtown, but, you know, so much anxiety.
Sure.
So I went in there and sat down, and we talked ideas, and she said no to every one of them. And one thing that did happen, it was one of those blind moments, because there's so much anxiety anyway, and we're in this cubicle office where the partitions don't go all the way up to the ceiling, so the sound's bouncing all around. And I suddenly had this horrible moment where I thought she'd left. She was so quiet. But she can't stand it anymore. She's walked out on me. But in fact, she was there. I finally said, okay, you don't like any of my ideas. There must certainly be something that you have that you've been wanting someone to pick up. And there was a pause, and then she said, as a matter of fact, there is. And so there was a children's issue that she wanted me to write about. And from there, I got a lot of assignments. And I remember saying to editors then, when I got brave and I'd meet them, I'll write anything but stuff about handicapped people.
Yeah.
That's what we were back in the early
80s. Yeah, that's right. That's right.
And then a couple things happened. Two things, really. A friend twisted my arm, begged, pleaded, made me write an article for a religious newspaper about this stupid special Sunday they used to do called Access Sunday, where all the people with disabilities come to church and there's a big fuss. You know, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's got different names now, but this was 20 years ago. And I was so irritated. I didn't want to write it, and she bugged and bugged, and it was needed. So I interviewed a bunch of people, and everybody said what I felt, which was, that was garbage, and they didn't want that kind of attention. You know, we just all want a place at the table. And that's what I wrote, and it was so, it was just exhilarating to write something that I felt so passionately about and knew so well, and the response was so strong. And that's when I decided I'm changing channels. This is what I want to do. And I proposed a weekly column to the Cincinnati Enquirer, and it's one of the amazing stories in freelance legend, you know, because all of us have these stories of many rejections, but for whatever reason, the publisher got my letter, and 4 days later I had a handwritten note from him saying, what a wonderful idea, and no one better to write it than you, and voila, I've been a disability rights beat reporter ever since.
Wow, that's an amazing story. Let me just do a little bit of housekeeping here. We've just opened the lines, or Gary, the board guy, is in the process of opening the lines. The telephone number to call is 866-666-7926. If you are listening to this program at any other time, at any time other than 9 to 10 on Sunday night Eastern Time in North America, or 1 to 2 on a UTC Monday morning, it's a repeat. Don't call. Just enjoy the program. If you do want to call and speak to Deborah, I know many of us have benefited so much from her, not only her technology insights, her reviews, her information, but being that disability beat reporter, this is the opportunity to do it at 866-666-7926. How did you do all of this, Deborah, before we had our technology? I'm sitting here thinking, holy scamoly. I mean, I remember dialogue was like, you know what, the late 70s, early 80s or something. Man, oh
yeah.
Man, how'd you do it?
I suppose there are probably a lot of people who have memories of doing term papers the same way.
Oh, yes.
I did research in whatever way. I feel very grateful that in those early days I was a rapid Slayton Stylus writer, because that's all that I'd had growing up was a Slayton Stylus. So I took notes on thin paper, and I used grade 3 Braille, and I punched those little dots really fast. And so I took my notes with a Slayton Stylus. I rarely, to this day, one thing that separates me from other writers I know is that I don't do rough drafts, and I think that comes from a time when I knew I didn't have time to do a rough draft. It all took so long.
Yeah.
So I'd write it on the Braille writer, and then I'd read it into a tape, and then type from my own dictation on the tape recorder. I had one of those little start-stop dictation kind of pedals, and would type it from my own dictation. But then, of course, I couldn't proof it, and I don't care how good of a typist we were, you know, you still have to have someone look at it. So I would wait for my only trusted reader to come, and she would read it, and inevitably she'd find an error or two, and I'd retype that page. I estimated that when I got my first computer device, which was the tape-based VersaBraille in 1985, my productivity level literally quadrupled. I could do 4 articles in the time it had taken me to do one. And if that hadn't happened, if it hadn't been for technology, I don't see how I could have made a living doing it.
Exactly, yeah.
It was so time intensive.
Yeah. Yeah. We have a caller. Let's bring the caller in. Hi there. You're with Deborah Kendrick and Marlena.
Hello, Marlena. This is Stan.
Hello, Stan, the man from Oregon.
First of all, Deborah, I have to tell you, I always enjoy reading your articles in Access World.
Well, thank you. You cannot
go and talk about the successful articles without talking about the horror stories that have happened.
Good question.
Because the reason I'm asking this, because you touched on this sort of thing a moment ago, because I remember when it was years ago at San Francisco State, I used, and Marlene will remember these, electric typewriters with the ribbons.
Oh, do I ever.
But
oh, yeah.
Somehow you
oh, yeah.
can write and write and write, but somehow sometimes you don't
yeah.
know that
yeah.
the ribbon has
oh, yeah.
messed up.
Yeah, or the ribbon ran out, and I turned in like a 15-page paper, handed it to the teacher, and the prof said, this looks really good, and I'd like to be able to read it, but your ribbon blew
exactly.
out on page 3.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Exactly. That happened.
You know,
that happened to me, and luckily I had the Braille copy so I could go back and redo it. But, you know, and Deborah, you touched on something, but I was wondering, have you had a horror story like that?
Since computers?
Not since computers. I'm sure that even when you didn't write, publicly, you probably kind of, did you closet write? You know, just kind of, did you ever have any horror stories that happened while you were writing?
One, certainly, the typewriter being on stencil happened to me probably 3 times, at least, that I can remember. And I just have to throw in here that my most beloved English professor of all time, bless his heart, I'll never forget it. One of those times was an essay for a class that he was teaching, and he said, when he gave it back to me, he said, "You got an A-, but I have to tell you, you have to either flip that little button on your typewriter or get a new ribbon." And I gasped, and I said, "Well, what happened?" And he said, "There are no ink on these pages, but I read the indentation."
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
That's probably why I had such a huge crush on that guy. But
wow.
Yeah. Isn't
he gets the Marlena Program Award for...
even using a computer, you can have, I call them computer meltdowns, where sometimes things happen. Have you had anything like that happen when you've written?
Probably more than I can count. I've had far too many experiences of failing to do what I always advise others, which is back up. So I've had more than one occasion where I'm on deadline and I think I always when this happens, I think I've just written the best piece I've ever written.
And
then,
course.
Of course, it's gone.
Course.
So it's good to tell yourself that, you know, because it's gone, so you'll never know.
But again,
I've had a few of those, but whenever people ask me horror stories, the thing that first comes to mind has nothing to do with computers, but tape recorders. It was at the beginning of my writing career, and I was still doing a lot of volunteering for Radio Reading, and George Shearing was coming to town for the Jazz Festival, and I got myself an exclusive interview with George. This was the thrill of a lifetime. I couldn't believe it. I mean, he made it a point to tell me that I was the only person who would interview him. And I wanted high-quality tape. I'm a writer, and I don't do what Marlena does. I don't know about broadcasts. And I wanted a high-quality tape because I thought we could maybe lift excerpts from it for the Radio Reading. Anyway, I borrowed the equipment from the studio rather than using my own. Biggest mistake of my life. I never had anyone really teach me how to use it. I got into his dressing room, did a good hour. Wonderful. He told me all kinds of stories, and it was great. And I couldn't wait to get home. And I got home, and I had nothing because...
Gosh.
You had to set the levels on this thing, and I didn't know it. I was used to my, you know, APH automatic level, and it was the kind of thing where you could hear, whoa, 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 you know, but no speech. And what I did is I reconstructed from memory, and I wrote a brief piece, nothing like what I would have done. And I would do this differently today, but at the time, I was so ashamed. George and I did correspond a little bit because he agreed to do a PSA for us. I never told him. I was just too embarrassed.
Oh.
So, George, I don't know where you are, but if you're listening, I... That's why you didn't get a glossy magazine copy from me of what I wrote.
Oh, that is so good.
It goes down. That was probably 1983, and I guess there's no pain like first pain, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I'll just affirm to you that even with the knowledge that you perceive that I have about all of this, I recently, now Stan, don't tell anybody, okay, because it's just the three of us,
right,
okay. So I, not so long ago, I had Ronnie Millsap on, and I was just over the moon about it. That has always been a dream of mine for years, that I would not only interview, but, you know, kind of get to know Ronnie, which in fact I have, and we communicate, you know, from time to time. He's just a really great guy. Well, so I got this whole thing arranged, and unbeknownst to me, Ronnie called me, and I just wasn't expecting it. And he called me on my business line. So, you know, I said, "This is Marlena." And he said, "Marlena, this is Ronnie Millsap." And I was like, "Oh my God." So, you know, we set up the time we're going to do the show, and everything is all hunky dory. And he gives me his home phone number, and I write it down in my Braille note. And let me tell you, friends, there's only one difference between a Y and an N, one dot. Between yes and no, when the Braille note says, "Do you want to save this record?"
No.
So I firmed him up on a Friday, and I am flying high all week. I'm going to have Ronnie Millsap on my show. The free world knows I'm going to have Ronnie Millsap on my show. And something drove me Saturday night to go in and look in my Braille note, make sure I had the number. It wasn't there. I didn't know what to do. I was Gary the board guy to the rescue. Fortunately, Ronnie didn't block his number on the caller ID.
So then
I didn't even trust that. I thought, well, what if he gave me a different number? You know how paranoid you get.
Right.
So the next day, I called the number, and it's like 2 hours before showtime. And, of course, he recognized my number right away. He said, "Hi, Marlena." And I said, "Oh, thank God it's you."
did you tell him what you had done?
I did. And he just laughed and laughed. He said, well, technology can do that to you. So, Deborah, I feel your pain.
But you know what? I really have to reiterate, because you do such a fantastic job on the Access World, and as well as the other people that are contributors that I look forward to every chance I get to kind of looking and seeing what articles I'm interested in hearing more about and what, you know, because, you know, you cherry picking, you say, okay, I'm interested in this, I'm not so interested in that, but, you know, but you still like to look and see what's going on anyway.
Oh, yeah. Well, thank you. It's fun. It's a lot of fun to do something that keeps you on the cutting edge of technology. I mean, I sort of shamefacedly admit to people all the time. I say, "Well, I'm not a real techie." Well, yeah, I'm a geek.
Well, anyway,
I'm a geek in that I love gadgets. And so
I want to take leave, so I'll give someone else a chance.
All right,
bye.
Thanks, Dan.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. 866. 866-666-7926 with Deborah Kendrick. We'll be here till the top of the hour, and then in the second hour we'll be open forum and we can talk about any old thing you want, and you can call back in the second hour. Some people are not sure about that, but you really can. And if you're listening to this program at any time other than 9 to 10 Sunday night in North America, Eastern time zone, it's a repeat, and enjoy the program. Deborah, what is the most difficult assignment you've ever had?
Well, one that comes to mind, I'm not sure this is the most difficult, one that was funny and difficult was I worked part-time as public relations coordinator for an elementary school. And they had an artist in residence series where one month there would be someone who would come in and teach the children about drawing, and another month a little bit about acting, whatever. One of those people, and so it was my job to go in and see what these people did and interview them and write an article that would be good enough that the local paper would pick it up, because that meant publicity for the school. It was a private school. And they, on the list of artists in residence one year, was a mime. And so interviewing and observing the work of a mime was a real trip.
I bet it was.
But it actually, you know, it was kind of fun, because what he did, he was teaching the children, you know, okay, you know, we are going to be a wall, and we are going to be a fountain, and all these really, really visual concepts that had never really occurred to me before, never having observed a mime. And, you know, I just did as much as I was able to kind of get in there and be as hands-on as possible and ask people a lot of questions, so that I wrote an article that did indeed, you know, get published and got a lot of, you know, positive response. I don't think people knew that a blind person had written it. The other one is a little more, that maybe people will relate to a bit more, is when Heather Whitestone was Miss America.
Oh, sure.
The woman who's deaf. At one point, she was going to be in Cincinnati speaking, and again, this was one of those thrills where her publicist contacted me and said that I was the only journalist in Cincinnati that Heather wanted to be interviewed by. So that was pretty exciting, and I was so excited, but I was terrified, because I knew that she was completely deaf, and I'd had some experience with deaf people before, but they had trouble reading my lips. What I've since learned is it's completely individual. Some people will say, you are so easy to read, and other people will, you're a blur. So I don't, that's a phenomenon that only a deaf person maybe understands. But I was really nervous, and we get into this dressing room, and I had said to the photographer from the paper, you might have to stick around. I might need help. So I get in there. The first thing she did was she handed me this 8x10 glossy, and she said, I've brought you a present. And it was an autographed photo of herself. And then she, so the embarrassment was on her for a minute, because then she said, oh, I'm so sorry. And I said, it's great. I love photos. This is great. And then I said, my only concern is, can you understand me? And she said, you speak beautifully. I can understand you just fine. And it was the neatest hour. I mean, the relief that she could understand me, and I think she was somewhat relieved I could understand her as well. We just had this lovely, relaxed hour of conversation that I think turned into a pretty nice article, and it's a memory that I really treasure.
Well, and I would imagine that in your line of work, you have many memories. You've had many instances to meet various and sundry kinds of people. If I were a student, if I were a totally blind student, and my goal was to become a beat reporter, say for me, for the Seattle Times, and I don't want to write about disability, I just want to be a reporter, what kind of advice might you give me?
Well, the first advice to any kind of writer is read, because you can't write if you don't read, period, which amazes me how many people don't seem to grasp that. Secondly, though, if you want to be a reporter, you have to force yourself to be out there. I'm not a real extrovert, and a lot of people, you know, laugh when I say that and say that's ridiculous when I say that I'm shy, whatever. But I am somewhat shy, and sometimes I have to really work on myself. But if you're going to do this kind of work, you have to be unafraid to go to places where you've never been before and talk to people that you've never talked to before. Ask for kinds of assistance that you've never asked for before. In a perfect world, when I'm really lucky, I have someone who's already known to me that I can take and say, you know, help me find this person, that person, whatever. But it doesn't always work out that way. And if it doesn't, and this, you know, this spills over into other areas of blindness too, but if you're alone, you've got to screw up the courage to do what you need to do to buttonhole the people you need to talk to.
And, you know, sometimes it is difficult. I mean, and people sort of don't believe me when I say this, but I'm very nervous in groups of people. I'm very nervous before each one of my shows, before each, and Dave Williams can attest to this, that, you know, we meet on the internet an hour before the show, we check the levels, we check the phone lines, because I'm competent, but I'm not so confident that I can say, piece of cake, I got it schnockered.
Yeah.
And we've got a phone call. Let's bring this caller in. Hi there, you're with Deborah Kendrick and Marlena. Who is this?
This is Nikki Covey.
Nikki Covey. Oh, that's great to hear from you. How's college going, ma'am?
It's going very well.
I was hoping you'd be listening to this program tonight.
Of course.
Well, meet Deborah Kendrick.
Hi, Deborah.
Hi, Nikki.
My question for you is, you just said a few minutes ago that your advice would be to read. So who are your favorite authors to read them?
All of the above.
All of them?
Yeah.
Okay. Awesome.
I'm a patchwork.
Awesome.
And Nikki is a writer. Nikki's a very special person to me, Deborah, which many of my listeners know. She's been sort of my surrogate little sister since she was 8 years old, and now she's in college, and of course I didn't get any older, only Nikki did. And, and she's quite a writer. She does journaling, and, this is one of the things that she really loves to do. And Nikki, would you tell Deborah about, and I don't want to embarrass you, but about what your you're hoping to maybe do with the journaling that you did at Guide Dogs when you got your dog.
Well, I really haven't pursued this too much yet, but I am hoping. I did quite a bit of journaling. I'm not, when we printed it out, it ended up being like 50 pages worth on my experience getting a dog, but I'm hoping to write, either use the journals and clean them up and make them into a book, or write a book to be a guide for a high school student considering getting a dog, because I think there's a lot of misconceptions about getting a dog. At least I know I had them that go around for high schoolers. So
I think that's a wonderful idea. That's a great idea.
So when you
you've just recently gotten your dog and written these?
Yeah, about a year ago, actually.
And you're in college now? Or you?
Yeah, I just got to college about 2 weeks ago. Is that
okay,
right?
So you were in high school when you got your dog.
I think
that's a wonderful idea.
Yeah.
Because it seems to me that it used to be that no one was getting dogs in high school, but it seems like that's shifting a bit. And I think people could really use some insight in hearing about someone else's experience.
Yeah, that's my hope. I mean, there were a lot of people that said, oh, I would never take a dog into high school. But actually, I thought the high school compared to the real world was easier with the dog.
Yeah.
And I think that depends on the school, but...
And I'll tell you something else. Some people, you know, you do not be discouraged by anyone who says to you, oh, there's already been this written and that written on that topic, because no one is going to write it exactly like Nikki. And that's, you know, one of the things that has just been so clear to me for so long is that we never have to worry about, as writers or musicians or any kind of art-connected form, that someone else has already done what we want to do, because there's just never a piece that's done exactly the way another individual is going to do it. In a way, I mean, there's, I forget who it was who said that every idea is really, there aren't any new ideas anymore. And it was, I think, one of the French philosophers said this a century or two ago. You know, all ideas are just reworked in a new and fresh way. And so that's what you're doing, and that's wonderful.
Yeah, I'm really, really excited. You know, it's one of those things that is the challenge not to put it off, but it's, you know, until you have more time. And I was like, oh, yeah, I'll have more time during the summer. That didn't happen. Between senior year and college.
But doesn't time kind of evolve, Deborah? I mean, when it's right, it's there. Isn't that kind of...
Well, yeah, and I'm probably a bad person to talk to about commitment to the project, because I have written voluminous amounts, published voluminous amounts of material, far more than many people I've known who have been full-time staff reporters at one paper or one magazine. But the sickness, my particular illness, is I can produce vast amounts of work, but only with deadlines. So I really understand. I mean, I you know, that my greatest disability is procrastination.
Yeah,
so I understand you saying you put it off, you know, you...
I'm a college student in every sense of the word.
Well, I think we all three share that, ladies. I think the three of us are. Well, Nikki, thanks so much for calling, and I'll give you a call next weekend and see how your third week? Second full week, right?
Second full week.
Yeah, she's a freshman. Oh, boy. But like I said, only...
Good luck, Nikki. Thank you.
Only Nikki got older, not me. So I'll talk to you next weekend.
Yes, and don't let me forget to tell you about the scary bus trip.
The scary bus trip. Woo-hoo.
I found out what train station not to get off at.
Well, there you go. Now you know. See?
Yeah.
All right. Have a good one.
You too.
Bye-bye. 866-666-7926. We're with Deborah Kendrick. We will be with Deborah up until the top of the hour, and then we'll be in open forum. Deborah is now, among many other things, a columnist, poet, but she's also the senior features editor for Access World. Talk to me a bit about Access World, Deborah.
Well, I don't really, Jay Leventhal, of course, is the editor-in-chief, and he makes all of the final decisions of which products we're going to review and when. It's a team effort, but he has the last word on the order of things, which, you know, when they'll be scheduled. And I guess the only consistent writers, I mean, the only ones who you know you will see every issue are Jay and me. And then there are, if anyone listening has a serious yen to write a review of a product, I would strongly recommend that you contact Jay, because we're, you know, taking material from lots of other people, you know, sometimes more than once and sometimes only once. I think, you know, we make a real effort to balance, not just from company to company and represent all the vendors, small and large in the field, but also getting that balance of blindness and low vision products and you know, we've tried to do a few things about deafblind, and if anybody has any ideas along those lines, please pass those along too, because that's one area where we struggle a little bit to find good information.
Let's talk a little bit more about how people can contribute, but we have a caller. Hi there, you're with Deborah Kendrick and Marlena. Who is this?
Good evening, Marlena. This is Timothy.
Hello, Timothy. How are you?
Not bad, thanks. And you?
I'm fine. What's going on all the way up there in Nova Scotia?
Not too bad. We just got over a nice little storm, a storm that didn't exactly hit properly.
Oh, dear. Oh, my. Well, do you have a question for Deborah?
I just wanted to basically say that I surely hope that your university year goes good.
Well, great. All right. Well, thanks, Timothy.
No problem.
Have a lovely evening.
You too.
Bye-bye. 866-666-7926. So, yeah.
Lena, I have a little plug I'd like to put in here.
Please do. Please do.
Or a plea for information, I should say. As I told you before the show, my last couple of weeks have been somewhat obsessed with writing pieces about Hurricane Katrina and people with disabilities involved therein. And if anyone listening knows stories, personal accounts of people with disabilities who either were in the hurricane, in the flood, or who in some way have assisted others who were victims of the storm and the flood, I would really appreciate hearing from you.
I just read a story last night in my email, which I unfortunately have deleted, and I think emptied my deleted items, but if I haven't, I'll check. I was very moved. Actually, I bet I have it, because I sent it to Gary, the board guy, so I would have it in my sent items. But I was very moved about a story about a woman who had been separated from her guide dog, and is still in the hospital, or was at the time this was written, and when finally she could make her situation known, she made it known that her guide dog named Molly had been separated from her, and they launched a monumental effort, and they went back in through the flooded water, and they went up to the second floor of this woman's house, and they found the dog. Oh gosh, I was in tears by the end of the story. And they cleaned it up and surprised her with it. So I will send you the email, and then you can, you know, check it all out and do what Deborah Kendrick does with it.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
Yeah.
I think there are lots of those stories, and they're just going to be hard to dig out, to get at. I've been getting them from a variety of sources, but I want as many as can be found, and to sort of draw some conclusions is what I'm hoping. You know, that I sometimes joke that I'm, you know, the real Pollyanna reporter, because I'm pretty much always looking for the goodness in people and the bright sides of stories. And as we all know, for a few days, it was pretty horrible, the kinds of images and stories that were coming across mainstream media about the people in New Orleans. And I think when all is said and done, we're going to hear a lot more stories about the humanity of people, just like the one you just said.
And just while we're talking about this subject, let me tell folks who may not know, last week we did a show on disaster preparedness, and we pretty much did two hours on it. And our first guest was a local chief of police here in Des Moines, Washington, who set out a plea to please help the law enforcement, the first responders. Let's figure out a system by which first responders will know that there are people with disabilities, and in our case, there are blind people there and who need help. And our second guest was Mike Hingson, who, of course, you know, survived the towers, and he talked a lot about the importance of knowing your environment, knowing before anything happens, be able to find your way like the palm of your hand around wherever you are. So for anyone who missed that, and our third guest, gosh, I know I was forgetting something. Our third guest was Day Al-Mohammed, the director of ACB Advocacy and Governmental Affairs. And she spent an hour talking about the efforts that ACB is doing. And so what I'm leading up to here is that program is on the main page of acbradio.org. And you can listen to it or download it or whatever, because we feel it's so very timely. So if anyone missed that, please feel free to check that out. So, yeah, so Deborah, what's in your future? Where are you going to go now?
Well, that's a good question, because I've been kind of fishing around trying to figure out some new things to do lately. You know, it's time for some changes, not necessarily not doing what I'm already doing, but expanding and doing some things that are fresh that I haven't done. And I don't exactly know what those are going to be. I do love technology so much. So sometimes I think, well, maybe it would be kind of fun to write some documentation, but I'm not sure about that. And the other thing that I've been thinking about for a long, long time, but I think I'm getting a bit more serious, is working on some kind of memoir. But we'll see. You know, I'm a procrastinator, and I also have a tendency to just sort of look around at a lot of things and just kind of observe for a while before I can figure out where I want to be, and that's what I'm doing right now. So, you know, if you have any great ideas of something you think really needs done that has to do with words, let me know.
Oh, that's pretty funny. Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, I kind of look at the same thing in terms of what I'm doing here with ACB Radio. And it isn't that I don't want to do this, but, you know, I want to expand what I do, but what that is.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to kind of put some of those things together. Do you think that being a woman who is blind has been something that has been a help, or do you think it's been tougher because you're a woman?
I think it's been both. Sometimes it's been an advantage because both elements are a surprise to people. You know, in contexts where they don't expect a woman, and they certainly didn't expect a blind woman to show up on their doorstep. But there have certainly been times where I have been discriminated against for one or the other or both characteristics. One that comes immediately to mind is in 1990 for the signing of the ADA, the signing ceremony at the White House. I had been, a lot of us who were advocates around the country were invited to the signing ceremony, and I was invited as an advocate, but I wanted to go as a journalist and get a story for my newspaper. And it just happened that the editor, you know, there's a lot of turnover in newspapers, and I had just gotten a new editor a couple months before, and he hated me. And looking back, I know he hated me in part because I was a woman, in part because I was blind, and maybe most of all because I wrote about disabilities as a really positive, upbeat thing. My column is called Alive and Well, and he happened to have a wife who was dying of multiple sclerosis. So I'm sure that had something to do with his attitude. But I called him and I said, you know, this is really wonderful. You know, this law is going to be passed, and it's great, and I've been invited, and will you send me? He said, absolutely not. He just completely brushed me off. Well, I wasn't taking no for an answer. I wanted to go. And so I went over his head. I called the publisher, which was a big risk. Probably the only time in my whole life I've done that. But I did. And the publisher told him to send me.
Wow.
I wouldn't advise that. Like I said, I've never done it since. But I was so desperate. And I was so sure I was right. I was so sure that they needed this story. And so what he said to me was, okay, you can go, but, you know, we're gonna pay your way, but here's the thing. I want a story that afternoon, and I don't want your advocacy journalism, whatever he thought that was. I don't know. It's something he made up.
Wow.
But he said, I want a news story. And at the time, I wasn't sure how I was going to do it long distance. And he said, and I'm sure you don't have any way to write it, so just call me up and tell me, and I'll write it. And I thought, yeah, right.
Yeah.
The story of a life, and I'm going to call you who hates me and hates the whole topic. I'm going to let you write it? I don't think so. So I did some real scrambling, and I have to say that it was one of those times where, you know, being plugged into our wonderful network of blind people with technology saved the day, because I figured out how to put together, this was a classic Braille and Speak with a modem, and I wrote my story on the Braille and Speak, and I sent it over the telephone line, which is nothing now, but it was big deal news in 1990.
Oh, boy, was it ever. Was it ever. Yeah,
and it was, you know, a page one story the next day. So that was certainly a time where being a blind woman was not a good thing. But I know there are times when it's been a plus, when I've, you know, caught people off guard a bit.
Well, we spend a fair number of shows during each season on the Marlena program, where sometimes it's when I can't think of anything else and I don't have a guest, and other times I actually plan it, but I never tell the listener which it is. But we spend a fair number of shows kind of looking back on, you know, the technology that we remember. And actually, you know, those are some of my most popular shows. And so it really is no surprise to me that, you know, it was the network of blind people with the technology of the day that was able to come through for you. And I'm sure sending that first article over the wires, you must have thought that it was magic, you know, like wow.
It was such a thrill. It was a thrill, I'll admit, in part because, you know, anybody who was there, the whole experience was such a high period.
Yes, it was.
And then to be victorious over this guy who talked to me like I was a kindergartner, you know, and to know that I was sending him a perfect story and, you know, that I didn't need him. I mean, it was still condescending to say to me, well, you just call me and tell
me.
And
I'm
so it was a thrill on every facet. It was just great. And, you know, I remember, I don't even remember who all I called. I can remember just calling one person after another and all these people kind of putting different pieces of the picture together for me, and we figured out how to do it.
Yeah, and now, of course, we take it all so much for granted, you know. I mean, I sit with my Braille note and a wireless card in an airport or a hotel, you know, and boom, there it goes, it's gone, you know. But, you know, not 15 years ago, getting a story through a modem and a Braille and Speak Classic was just a magical, empowering thing, so.
But don't you still get excited sometimes? I mean, I do.
When
something works, you know, and the wireless is a good example. I'm still so thrilled by that.
To be
sitting somewhere and boom, I could be listening to NPR on my Braille note.
The first time I really, you know, I'd used wireless on my laptop and, you know, that's all right. That's fine. But when I used it on my Braille note at Starbucks, you know, and this, then we're not talking years ago either. I mean, this is, you know, recent history. I mean, I really felt like I was one of the in people, you know, the technology.
Yeah.
I was finally there, man. Finally there.
I haven't actually done that yet. I keep saying there's this one place in my neighborhood, a coffee place, and I keep thinking, I'm going to go down there and hope that people ask me what I'm doing.
Oh, they will. Trust me. You
do it.
Oh, gosh, yes. Oh, yes, yes. everybody comes, what's that? What are you doing? And, you know, I don't mind. You know, if I've got a lot of work to do, you know, I might say, well, let me tell you what it is really quickly, because right now I'm actually working on something, but when I don't, you know, when I'm just kind of hanging, you know, I mean, we're in a hotel in Oregon somewhere recently, and I think I must have had 10 people standing around, and they said, well, what is that? And so I explained it, and they're like, well, wow, well, does it do email? Well, yeah, it's, wow, this is so it's, you know, we
that
just...
Is so neat, though.
Kind
I mean, that goes
along.
Such a long way.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Deborah, thank you so much for joining us. Is there anything that I haven't asked you that you want to say or wish that I had asked, or any message that you, Deborah Kendrick, want to get across tonight?
I think simply that I have said for years, I feel very fortunate to do work that I love, and in particular, for your audience, Marlena, it has meant so much to me when my work reaches my peers, my friends who are blind, that I love that. So I do hope people will continue to read Access World and to read Syndicated Columnist Weekly from National Braille Press. They run a lot of my stuff. And to talk to me about it when I do something right or do something wrong. I love getting mail.
And how could people get a hold of you if they want to do that?
The easiest email is my Access World email, which is dkk@afb.net.
And that's dkk@afb.net.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much, Deborah, and give my best to John, and tell him.
Thank you for having me.
Well, and tell John and you too that Gary and I look forward to seeing you in March at CSUN.
And we do the same.
All
thank
right.
Thank you so much.
Have a wonderful night.
Thank you. You too.
I wrote to you somewhere in South Australia, a poet's heart in the eye of a hurricane. I struggle with finding words to sing these days, I said, as if my thoughts are waiting in the wings for the stage to clear. And you in your elegance and humor filled the room, your love and your concern, your anger at the injustice of man's narrowness and fear. Thank you for being here. You wrote of love from the coast of Mendocino, a poet's heart crying a fighter's tear. The children of your body spread out across this earth like messages written across time, measuring the years. And you in your elegance and humor fill the room, your love and your concern, your anger at the injustice of man's narrowness and fear. I thank you for being here. I heard your songs reach out to California, a poet's heart locked in the Coeur d'Alene. Of the old men and the booze singing out the truth in lies of forgiveness and loyalties to friends, constant as the endless railroad ties. And you elegance and humor fill the room, your love and your concern, your anger at the injustice of man's narrowness and fear. I thank you for being here. All poets' hearts closed, though far apart. I remember how you said that language is a knife that spreads what we feel across the dry crust of someone's heart. And you, in your elegance and humor, fill the room, your love, your concern, your anger at the injustice of man's narrowness and fear. I thank you for being here.
And I thank you for being here. I'm Marlena. We're into the second hour, and it's open forum, and this is when I really rely on you guys, because you don't want to sit here and listen to me talk. It would be like an NPR telethon, or radiothon, or talkathon, or some kind of thon. The music we just heard was Kate Wolf and the CD is entitled A Poet's Heart, and that's the title track, A Poet's Heart. And I thought that would be somewhat fitting after spending an hour with Deborah Kendrick, who herself is a poet. We didn't really get to talk very much about that, but we'll have to bring her back and do that again. Hi there, you're with Marlena. Who's this?
Hey, this is Danny.
Hey, Danny, how you doing?
Doing okay, thank you.
So did you ever get that apple? I know you're interested in the apple. Did you?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah?
I got it April. No, it was May.
Yeah, so...
Got it in May.
You like it?
Yeah, I like it. It's a very stable system and everything, but because it's the first generation of its screen reader, it admittedly, it's it takes a little more time for me to do some things than I'm accustomed to in Windows.
Sure, sure.
Main thing I use with Windows, I have a Braille translation program and a Braille printer. Plus, I use FreedomBox a great deal.
Oh, isn't FreedomBox is cool, isn't it?
Even though I have used the internet long before FreedomBox, it just provides so much content that you can't get elsewhere. Plus, the email program is really easy to use. Now, the Apple is quite, as I said, quite stable. You know, it never crashes. But I find that to do a lot of things in terms of browsing the web, it is more cumbersome for me.
Yeah, yeah.
But
well, I haven't had a chance to play with it yet, so I keep telling myself I'm gonna go into a place where it is and I'm gonna play with it, and I just haven't had a chance to do it.
Well, I got to tell you the good thing about the Apple, and I really applaud Apple about this. I have never had a need to do it, but if you have, let's say you have to redo your computer. Well, first of all, the Apple can, you can go into all the preferences and do that, you know, work everything in the control panels and everything. If you have to reinstall Tiger, which is the operating system, that's
right.
You can actually put in your disk and key in a certain key command. And according to many people I've talked to, you can make the Apple, you can make the thing talk.
Oh.
Even before you install the software.
Now this is good.
So I think, now what Apple needs to do is begin to support Braille. They need to begin to give Duxbury whatever code it needs, or Duxbury needs to get the code it needs to get moving with System 10, because if you try to use Duxbury, you can only go to System 9. And that ain't going to work on brand new Apples.
Yeah.
We have to be patient with Apple and realize this is their first attempt at a screen reading, an integrated screen reading program. Potentially, this could be a really excellent solution down the road, because if you could really get that screen reader mature and improve the quick, you know, it doesn't come with too many aids to get you going. That's the big thing. Although the first day I got the Apple, I was using TextEdit, which is your bare bones word processing. So, and I did get on the web a little, but not that much. But it has a lot of potential. I mean, somebody could go out and buy a Mac Mini and have a screen reader built in, you know, which is, it, put it this way, this thing does far more than Narrator has ever done, and Narrator is a pretty poor... Microsoft, which has all the bucks in the world, could theoretically make a screen reader as good as VoiceOver if they had a mind to do it.
Do you participate in the Tuesday Topics discussions? Because they just discussed the Apple, I think.
No, I had gotten on there a couple times before, but I got a full-time job now, and when, you know, 9 o'clock rolls around, I'm dead.
Yeah. So what are you doing for work?
Well, I work in what some believe is a, bad choice for blind people, but I say if you can't find anything else, it's honest work. I work in a at a factory.
I don't think there's a darn thing wrong with that choice.
I work in, it's a nonprofit factory for blind people, and I work there. And You know, there's something to be said for working with your hands, because as long as you're working where I am, as long as you're doing your job, you can cut up all you want to with the other people.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas if you have a paper job, oh, you got to really concentrate on everything.
Well, and, you know, I think that many of us have grown through the phase in our lives where we made judgments for other people based on what we perceived to be good or not good. And I absolutely believe that if you are doing a job, I don't care if you're Mike Hingson and you're the manager of Qualcomm, which is what our guest last week did, or whether you're Marlena and you manage, you own a small business and manage another small one,
mm-hmm.
or you're Danny and you work with your hands in a workshop setting. The bottom line is you're working and you're happy and you are contributing the best part of you that there is to contribute. And
I don't earn very much money. I never have. But I don't go hungry.
Yep.
I got a roof over my head.
Yep.
You know, I
and you're happy. And you're happy. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, and there's two things I'll cut you loose.
All right.
Well, these two things. First of all, do you know anything? I'm going to ask both questions and then do you know anything whether that Spanish phone is ever going to get off the ground?
Oh, the Oasis?
Yeah.
You know, I don't. And I haven't seen anything more about it. And I, as I recall correctly, it was Code Factory.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Code Factory have gone on to do wonderful things now with Mobile Speak.
Maybe they are shifting their focus away from that.
Yeah, they've got Mobile Speak for the Nokia line of phone, and
right.
there's a couple other phones that it works with as well. And then they've also just started the public beta of Mobile Speak Pocket, which works on iPacs and Dells, the PDAs. So
okay.
I would doubt that we will see that phone.
Yeah, I kind of think so. And another thing, for those who might use Nextel, I haven't done it yet, but if you get a Nextel i355, you can download a piece of software that'll make some functions on it talk, but I've not yet had a chance to play with one. I don't know how workable it is or anything.
Well, you need to download the software, my man, and do a review for main menu.
Well, I don't yet own the phone.
Oh, well, first you got to get the phone.
Right. And there's another thing. The people that make the Jotadot, Quantum?
The Quantum, right.
They make another kind of Braille writer whose name escapes me. But it's another Brailler with, quote, adjustable keys. But they never gave a price on their website, and I don't know whether there's an American dealer that makes it.
Gosh, the only one I know of, and there could be much more than what I know, but immediately what comes to mind is the Mountbatten. Is
no,
that?
That's a Braille embosser.
Right.
I'm talking about a mechanical device.
Oh, okay.
It's on their website, but they don't tell you how much it is. They don't tell you how to get a hold of one.
Huh.
So I just wondered if anybody out there knows anything about any of those topics. But, hey, thank you so much for your time, and I'm going to cut you loose, and hopefully I'll hear from somebody in some kind of way.
Well, do you want to give your email?
Yeah, I can do that. It's Danny Boy, that's DannyBoy. At myfreedombox.com.
All right.
That's
great.
Danny Boy at myfreedombox.com. And anyone is welcome to email me for any reason.
All right. Great. Well, thank you, Danny. I appreciate it. I appreciate you staying up to listen.
Okay. Take care.
All right. Have a good work week.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. 866-666-7926. We are in open forum. If you're listening to this program at any time other than 10 to 11 Eastern in North America, it's a repeat. And we've got a caller. Hi there. You're with Marlena. Who's this?
Hello, Marlena.
Hello. Let's see. I know this voice.
This is Pam Quinn from Iowa.
Pam Quinn! Oh, the lady who was empowered.
That's right. And I thought you might like to take a wild guess as to what I'm using to listen to your show tonight.
You're listening on the Empower.
That's right.
Oh, how fabulous is that?
Yeah, isn't it? Isn't it, though? I'm sitting out here on my glider, on my deck, with listening to, relaxing with my fountain and listening to the Marlena Show.
How fabulous is that? You know, that gives me a shiver.
Oh, it's great, I'll tell you. It really is. I still can't get over that I won this. And you know what I ended up doing was I got to thinking about it a couple days later, and I sent an email to Jonathan, and I said, you know, I said, if I can't do this, you know, that's fine, no problem at all, because it's a wonderful gift as it is. You know, it's a voice note, Empower. But I said, I wondered if I could possibly pay the difference and have the Braille display added and have a Braille note in power. And, you know, I would have been perfectly thrilled either way, but I thought, wow, you know, this would be probably the only opportunity I would ever have
sure.
to be able to get a Braille note in power.
Sure.
It would just be a little bit over half the price. And, of course, you know, he said, absolutely, we can organize that for you. And so that's what I did. And, boy, I tell you, the day it came, I just had the feeling it was going to come that day, and I was sitting out here on the deck waiting for it, and sure enough, it came, and I was talking about it on the list, and I had to laugh. Shannon Reese, you know, the one that won the Empower at the ACB convention.
Yes, oh yes.
She said, yeah, I know the feeling. She said the day that that mine came, she said, I had the feeling it was going to come, and I was waiting for it. And then she said, I about killed myself getting to the door. I said, yes, I know the feeling. I definitely know the feeling.
But, well, it was so much fun to be. I mean, I was there when Shannon won hers, and so it was wonderful because I just love Shannon. She is one of the Earth's truly wonderful people.
Oh yeah.
And then to have you be the winner, and we had just spoken.
I know.
And I know. And you said, you know, you called my show and you said, oh, I hope I win the Empower.
Oh.
And so when they told me that you were the winner on, because I didn't know till just before my show, you know, nobody trusts me with a secret.
Oh, you knew before the show then?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, I thought that you just got the number right when they
said
you get 14 on the line.
That was me yelling to Gary, the board guy, to get number 14 on the line. And
I tell you, that was something else.
Oh,
it was awesome.
It was so exciting. I just was delighted.
Yeah, we were listening to the show that night, and it was so funny because you were saying, you said, I know you're all up on the edge of your seats waiting for us to draw the winner. And my son said, oh, Mom, she's right on there. You are on the edge of your seat, you know. And then when you said, the numbers were 8, 13, and 14, and that threw me off a little bit because I had no idea, you know, what number I was.
Yeah, yeah.
And then when they said, get 14 on the line, and then when the phone rang, oh, man, oh, wow, that was just, I tell you, the rest of that night and the next day, I just would walk around like, you know, did I actually win this? You know?
Oh, that's great. Well, I hope you use it in wonderful health, and I hope you continue to love it.
Oh, I sure do. It's really incredibly easy to learn to use. I spent the whole, you know, the first evening with it that I got it. And I, you know, the first evening I had a book in the book reader, and I was getting familiar with the commands and everything. By the second day I was on the internet with it already. I just went ahead and got a wireless card right along with it. And, you know, like I said, I was on the internet, and ACB radio and everything the second day. So it's really incredibly easy to use. And,
that's great.
Do you have the transplant or no, they haven't started the transplant yet.
No, because I run a dealership, I got a demo, so that I could actually sell them. So yeah, the transplant starts in October.
Right. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So you have the Braille note in power too, I would imagine.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, uh-huh. I do.
Yeah. What do you think of the Braille display on it?
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, I do too. It's, it's really nice and firm and nice and crisp and everything. But I said, you know, it takes some getting used to how hard to press on it, I guess, because I used to have I still do. I have a Braille light also. This is a little bit sharper than the Braille light. In fact, my index finger was really sore after reading my first book on it.
Yeah, yeah. The Braille is very crisp and very clear.
Uh-huh,
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I ordered one of those storage digital cards.
Oh, you're going to love that.
Stamp.
Yeah, oh.
What I plan to do with that is just record right on that instead of in the Empower itself.
Sure.
Because my son, he plays the piano, and we go to, and he's in the band and everything, and I go to a lot of concerts, and I thought, well, I'll just put that right in there and record directly to that, and that'll be great.
Well, you're gonna love it. You're gonna love it. It's a great tool, and keep listening to my show on it.
I certainly will.
All right.
Well, good talking to you, Marlene.
All right. Well, you too, Pam. Call me again.
Okay.
All righty. Have a good time at your fountain. I'm envious.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Bye bye.
Bye.
866-666-7926. Boy, I remember that night. That was a phenomenal night. And my on-air technology wasn't functioning well, and we had to have Jonathan in the chat room and not on the phone, and oh dear, oh dear. Oh, but we had to make that program happen because, it had been put aside, for every good reason to remember Russell Smith. And so we had to kind of get it done at the end of August instead of the beginning. Hi there. You're with Marlena. Who's this?
Hi, Marlena. This is Joe from Michigan. How are
Hi,
you?
Hi, Joe. I'm fine. How the heck are you?
Well, pretty good for a bald guy.
Well, I'm all right for a blind lady.
Well, the great thing about being bald and blind is I don't have to look at it.
Neither do I.
There you go. There you go.
What's on your mind tonight, sir?
Actually, it was kind of in conjunction with the wonderful program you had with Deborah, and the talk about people with disabilities in Katrina.
Yes.
And it's something that I'm a cross-disability activist, as you know, and something that is very alarming is that there were so many people with disabilities that not only was there not evacuation plans, including, you know, entire nursing homes and that type of thing for, you know, people with profound mobility impairment. But there wasn't the traditional infrastructure that we think is supposed to be in place for evacuation.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, the bus systems were not lift equipped, even if they were used. There are numerous stories of people being evacuated, even from the Superdome. Who survived that far, had to abandon their wheelchair, you know, to be carried on to the buses, and then were without that equipment when it came into being. When they came to the evacuation, as a matter of fact, whole areas of the Astrodome and many of the evacuees that are still at the Astrodome are people with disability and mobility impairments. There's also a tremendous, tremendous problem in the fact that we have inaccessible housing and inaccessible shelters for particularly people who use wheelchairs around in being able to place and serve people with mobility impairments. It's one of the hidden stories that just the press references, but doesn't go into detail.
Yeah,
yet.
Yeah.
And there were numerous stories, and I hate to be a downer because it's been a pretty pleasant show, but of people who died.
Who died? Yes, I know.
Because they
I
were
know.
Disabled.
I know.
There was one really heart-wrenching one of a person who had a personal care attendant, and the personal care attendant couldn't swim, and she was able to get up. This was with a person who was quadriplegic, and the water was rising. The person, personal care attendant, was able to make it to the attic, but it had no means of getting the quadriplegic person up to the attic, and that person drowned. It all goes to the fact, in my opinion, that our cities, our towns, our communities have not followed the Americans with Disabilities Act, you know, during the good times.
Yeah, but Joe, don't you think, don't you think that in the aggregate, certainly not in the not individually, but in the aggregate, don't you think that those of us with disabilities haven't stepped up to the plate? And either through positive interaction with the communities or in certainly not my preferred style of operating, as you would know from knowing me, in a confrontational manner, really helped / forced communities? I mean, we really, I think we haven't.
Oh, you're absolutely right. This was a Tuesday topic issue that we discussed. And you know, and I think, frankly, blind people are more passive than other people with disabilities. But we're loath to sue. We've had the ADA around for 15 years, 504 around for 32 years. And I've done surveys of school districts used for voting where a wheelchair user can't get in the front door.
Yeah.
Two of them, within 3 miles of where I live.
Yeah.
After 32 years and ample federal funding, and yes, we have to be assertive. You know, people are not going. I helped co-found the so-called Access Advisory Committee in Manchester, New Hampshire. And also filed several complaints on both them and the school district.
But don't you think though? I mean, there's a step before that, and that's I guess what upsets me is certainly I can't argue with a word you just said, but there's a step before the complaint filing and the confronting, and that's involvement, and that you know, I mean. There's no excuse for anyone who can hear this program to not know when their city council meets, because it's probably on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you know how to go on the internet because you're listening to this program,
yep.
Unless you're listening via the telephone or through a radio reading service. But even then, you pick up the phone, you dial 411, you get information, you get the city hall number, and you ask, when do these groups meet? And that, to me, is where we're falling down in the
you're
aggregate.
You're absolutely right. In as a matter of fact, many of my complaints and other issues that I've won are about accessing our government and accessing the information from our government. I regularly get the minutes of my local school board, of my commission for the blind, of all kinds of agencies, state and local, because I want to be involved. And I get them in accessible format. Now, fortunately, it's pretty easy for them to comply nowadays with email. But you're absolutely right. We have to be participants in the broader community that we're involved in, and that's on a regular basis, not on an afterthought basis.
Yeah.
Of course,
yeah.
A lot of what I do with my local school district is trying to bring them into compliance for all kinds of people with disabilities.
Sure.
But, you know, that's not the only thing I'm concerned with, nor was it when I lived in New Hampshire and, you know, I was raising a daughter, you know.
Yeah.
And I think that there aren't enough of us. I've unsuccessfully run for public office a couple occasions, but I don't think there are enough of us to do that.
Well, one of the guests I'm hoping to bring on this show at some point, and I don't want to reveal too much because I don't have a commitment yet from this individual, but this is an individual who is holding public office, and he's a mayor, and he's blind, and he's, you know, just out there, and he's doing stuff, and not that everyone should run for public office.
No, they shouldn't,
you know,
and I probably shouldn't.
Well, I know I shouldn't.
I was so ticked off at the school district when I lived in New Hampshire that I actually ran for school committee.
What part of New Hampshire did you live in?
I lived in Manchester for 13 years.
Yeah, I grew up in New England. That's why I was curious.
Yeah, I know.
I'm an old New Englander. That's right. That's me. I'll pack my car down there and have it yard any time. Don't you worry.
You betcha. Well, I don't want to go too much into New Hampshire. I'm back in Michigan now. This is where I grew up. But,
watch out or they'll export you back to New Hampshire.
I wasn't on the friendliest terms with a lot of people there. I mean, I had a college where I ran a radio reading service out of that I filed so many complaints that they had to put in $5 million worth of modification.
And
the school district and the city still have under monitoring for compliance in general, but the bottom line is those people and many of us, and when I say us I mean people with disabilities, don't realize that the Americans with Disabilities Act and Section 504 of the Rehabilitation Act are civil rights laws.
Right.
You know, what we're talking about is something as fundamental as our basic human and civil rights that are offered to everybody else. And not a step up, not a handout, but equal access, to our government,
right,
to places of public accommodation. For that struggle to one of the things that got brought to light.
And after this, I got to cut you loose.
You bet. One of the things that got brought to light is the hideous effects of racism and poverty in Katrina on the public airways. That really kind of shocked a lot of people's conscience.
Yeah, when it was white people who were gathering, they were gathering. When it was black people, they were looting.
That's right.
Yeah.
And kind of the hidden story is 24% of New Orleans, and I've spent a lot of times there, so I know how to say it, are people with disabilities.
Yeah.
And people living below the poverty level.
Right.
And many of those people, we can't document, but many of the people who died and died needlessly were people with disabilities.
With disabilities, yeah.
And I hope that America has its conscience shocked in that regard, so that we start to look at the systemic lack of compliance in the basic infrastructure. And that we address it.
Well,
I'll leave you with that.
All right, and I will leave you with, if you didn't hear the show last week, listen to it on the replay. It's on the front page because my first guest was the chief of police from Des Moines, Washington, who is pretty much saying, help us know what to do. So you have a good night, sir.
I listened to it, and it was a great show, and I thank you, and pleasure as always.
All right. Thanks,
bye,
Joe.
Bye.
Have a good one. Bye-bye. 866-666-7926. It's almost 35 minutes past the hour, and we're in open forum. We'll be with you till the top of the hour when the whole thing starts all over again, but it starts without me because it just gets repeated. I'm Marlena, and you're listening to the Marlena Program. Hi there. This is Marlena. Who's this?
Hello, Marlena. This is Matthew Dyer, one of your frequent callers.
Hello, Matthew Dyer, one of my frequent callers. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you?
I'm doing great. What's going on?
Well, actually, I'll tell you what's going on. It's kind of an interesting story because and I'm going to turn my computer down so we don't have to hear a lot of the noise going on. Anyway, I thought I have a couple of things I want to point out. Number one is I just had my Braille note sent out about a week ago Friday to be refurbished.
Ah, great.
Because Well, because here's the thing, actually, because it, technically I wasn't going to get it refurbished because it wasn't, you know, I mean, given the, I mean, I know it was an old unit, but which actually is what led me to that point, because I've been having some battery issues with it, and I had it, I actually, the first time I had it sent in was for a routine maintenance check with the battery replaced and everything, and they obviously cleaned out the Braille display and stuff, and, you know, the routine things that you're supposed to do every year or so. So I get it back, and, you know, everything's fine, you know, working fine. Well, then I start having battery issues. So I sent it in again, a second time, and paid like $200 to have the battery replaced. And then I get it back. Well, not 3 weeks late, not 2 weeks after getting it back, I start having battery problems again.
Oh boy.
So yeah, exactly. So here I am. I call tech support, and I said, look, this is the third time I've gotten this unit back, and it's given me no results with the battery. It's the last time before this happened, my problem was the battery went dead, and it wouldn't charge, so they replaced the battery. So I get it back, and it charges fine, but the discharge is completely screwed up. I mean, it was reading inaccurate, but when I went to check the gauge, it says it was accurate.
So what did they...
It was reading inaccurate.
So what did they do?
So I called tech support, and I talked to the lady and told her my situation. She said, well, what... She said, why don't you call my supervisor? She can help you. So I called and left a message for Karen Lincoln. And by the way, I want to thank her for the help she's really given me the past couple weeks ago, because without that, I probably would have had to send it in and had to pay $700 or $800 for it,
yeah,
which I don't have the money for.
So,
but
yeah, so tell me,
so anyway,
tell me what happened.
She calls me back, and she said, well, I checked into the information, and, you know, I told her after I told her that the unit was 5 years old and it was running the old motherboard, she said what we're going to do is we're going to have UPS pick it up, and we're going to, you know, get it boxed up and make sure that it's boxed securely.
Right, right.
So I did that. They sent it out. So UPS came, picked it up.
Right.
And she said they were going to, you know, they're going to pretty much refurbish the whole thing.
Oh,
and give me
great.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Great.
And I want to thank Karen Lincoln I don't know if she listens to the show or not, but.
Well, you know, I deal with Karen Lincoln on a weekly basis anyway for the company that I manage. So I'll make sure and tell her that Matthew says thank you.
I want to thank her for everything she's done. I mean,
oh, that's
great. I can't thank her enough. I mean, without her, I probably would be screwed up in the long run. And I made a point to them that I wanted to make sure that my files, and I'm not talking about my address list, because obviously when I get it back, it's going to have all new firmware and stuff on it. But my files, I would like to get them back. I mean,
they're
on a storage card or something.
They're pretty good about all that, aren't they?
Because I have a right. file that I try to keep up on every day, and I just recently got a compact flash card, which I really couldn't use until I got an adapter, which I finally got. But now I'm just trying to get my flash card to recognize my laptop so that I can put files on that card and then just put the card in there and read the files right off.
Yeah. Well, good luck with it all.
I don't think my laptop has a card slot that will work, that will make the card reader work, recognize it, or whatever you want to call it, the card adapter. I mean,
yeah, well, you know,
but,
I'm sure the tech support people there at HumanWare or where you got your laptop can give you some answers there.
Yeah. But anyway, I just wanted to throw that story out there for anybody who, you know, is either having problems or thinks they might be having problems. And you know, I just want to congratulate them on the great on the service I got with Karen and everybody else out there in California, because they're she was really good with me and everything. And
well, great.
And
in fact,
the same lady I talked to in tech support called me the next day and asked me if what they wanted to do with the unit. And I said, well, I already took care of it. I talked to her and they,
yeah.
You know, I explained
all right.
the situation. So,
all right, Matthew, I'm just
kind of waiting to get it, find
all
out.
Right.
Story and everything. So,
all right. Well, listen.
And make sure you say hi to her for me.
I will.
And thank her again. And thanks again for everything. Because that was, like I said, without her, she probably would be.
I'd probably be
lost in the dust somewhere. So,
all right, Matthew.
Thanks.
I got to run, and I'll be sure and tell her. And you have a good night, okay?
You too, Marlene.
All
Bye.
Right. Take care, Matthew. Matthew calls almost every week, and I'm always delighted to hear from him. And you can call me, too, at 866-666-7926. I'm trying to think of what's been going on with me this week. Gosh, it seems like the week has just flown by very quickly. I want to remind you that I will not be live next Sunday. Next Sunday, I will be visiting two puppy raiser clubs who have asked me to come and speak to them. They raise puppies for guide dogs for the blind, and they've asked me to come and speak. So I will be doing that instead of this, but I'm sure Dave Williams will find a great replay. Hi there, this is Marlena. Who's this?
This is Stan.
Stan the man.
I know I called in earlier.
That's okay. You can call back in the second hour.
But the thing is, I think the previous caller to the last one, I mean, I understand the importance of last call, too, but, I mean, the previous one that talked about the importance
yes.
of everybody getting involved
yes.
in any way that they can in terms of publicly involved in the community is a good thing.
Yes.
And 5 years ago, I wouldn't have expected myself to be doing certain things that I'm doing now. Now I'm on the transportation board here in Medford, and it's a very energizing, frustrating, but energizing experience.
Well, and you know, there's also a certain degree of legitimizing that
yeah.
involvement brings. You know, it's real easy to sit at home and then when something happens and it isn't right, to go and, pardon my language, but bitch about it.
Exactly.
You know, and we are facing here in Burien where we live, they're just now in the talking phases of rebuilding the downtown area.
Mm.
And they started this project and then stopped it for a while. But the part that they've started is ridiculous. They've done lovely things like not create accessible parking. And in one place where there is one accessible spot, there's no curb cut.
Oh, wonderful.
So you can't, if you can't get on the sidewalk, you can't get off. And so, and it frustrates us no end. And I recently saw that the town meetings for what they're calling the Burien Town or Downtown Burien or something, we're going to be starting. And, you know, Gary and I we plan to go. And you've got to do these things.
You do. And once you do and you start seeing, it's like I was talking to a friend who is in radio here in the area, and he said, well, how are things going, Stan? You know, I said, well, you take two steps forward and one step back.
Yep.
But at least you feel like you're doing something. And I think the thing of the matter is that I think a lot of times people find with the ADA it can become quite cumbersome. And people don't understand it, but what really gets to me is I don't understand, because some of the places with transportation allow things that should be ADA complaints to just go untalked about in terms of paratransit, for example. I've learned about, and yet, because we're going to a different system here, and one of the providers that's going to be providing possibility of it, who used to provide and provide service where I used to live. And I'm finding out that some of the things are different. So I'm thinking, well, before we let people come in here, we want to make sure that they are ADA compliant.
Yeah.
And then anyway, it's a different kind of thing, and it's something that I think a lot of times blind people are like the nation as a whole. We're complacent.
Absolutely.
We believe in the 30-second sound bite, and we don't question.
Yeah. Yeah. And or we think somebody else will do it, or you know, or whatever. I mean,
and I think that idea of someone else out there, or maybe our thoughts won't make a difference. And I'm proof that it can make a difference.
Yeah, it's and it's a little frightening, isn't it, to get started. You know, you want to open your mouth and say intelligent things, and then you think, gosh, everyone in this room knows more than I do.
But the thing of the matter is, when I decided to run for office, I thought, okay, maybe I win, maybe I won't, and it turned out to be I won by a pretty good margin. But, I mean, I don't let it go to my head. It's just I'm thinking, well, I'm happy to be at least a voice saying something on the community. And there were actually two blind members on this board that I serve on.
Oh, that's cool. That's really nice.
And I don't know if that's ever happened anywhere.
Yeah.
But anyway, I want to give other people a chance, so.
Well, you can call me anytime, Stan the Man from Oregon.
That's going to be the bumper thing from now on.
I love to say that. It's Stan the Man from Oregon.
Well, you take care and say hello to Gary the board guy.
I will. He's listening in the other room. He's monitoring and listening, and we're both smelling our dinner, which is almost cooked.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, God. Hey, we got to do another cooking show,
man. You know, I was thinking about that before. I said, you know, we have to.
I know.
We have to do that again, and I will provide something there too.
I know. I still have the recipe. What was it for your beans?
I have some beans, and I always do some tweaking of different things, and I have to laugh because now we see Jonathan Bosen's already starting to experiment.
I know.
With these things, and I'm thinking, and he was like a couple pages back then. And now he's gone to this new page, and, oh, well, mates, maybe I have to learn about these things.
Well, and, you know, he finally got his George Foreman grill.
I know.
Which I've been on to him for years about getting a George Foreman grill. I'm an advocate that every person who's blind, by God-given right, should be to have a George Foreman grill.
Well, you know, one of my friends up here has one of her parents is newly blinded, or at least, you know, in years, up there in years, in situations that caused blindness. I said, well, you know, the one thing that will help her out immensely
is George Foreman.
You know, I mean, I'm thinking.
Yeah, and I have to tell you, while you're saying this, my oven's going beep, beep, and Gary's yelling, dinner's done, so I'm going to go off the air now. No, Dave, take it easy, Dave. We've got 10 more minutes. Take it easy.
But anyway, you take care. But, I mean, isn't it interesting how an appliance that was put out, not even thought about for that particular
reason. I know.
And now we have several different little booklets, brailles.
Hey, wouldn't it be cool if I could get George Foreman on my show?
Oh, there you go. That would be the ultimate.
Now, that would be cool.
That would be. Well, and then, of course, we have to make sure we're on the email list to get reminders. And,
yeah.
You know, that would be awesome.
Shoot, Ronnie Millsap and George Foreman and Mike Hingson all in one year. Boy, I could retire.
No, don't do that.
Oh, sorry, slap my hand.
All right, Stan the Man from Oregon. I'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Okay.
All right,
bye.
Kiddo. Take care. Bye-bye. 866-666-7926. If I ever lose my teeth, I'll change my phone number because I would never be able to say that number. Anyway, so as I was saying, we're going to be on replay next week. And I'm sure that Dave will pick something that's hopefully interesting. And then the following Sunday, October 2nd, when I'll be back, is my birthday. So we're going to have like a birthday party. Hi there. This is Marlena. Who's this?
Yeah, this is Danny.
Hey, Danny. Twice in 1 hour. What's going on?
What's that?
I said, you've already called before in this hour.
Yeah, quick question. How
okay,
do you
real
make
quick.
The George Foreman temperature thing accessible? I may buy one day. I'll let you go.
All right. Thanks, Danny. Bye-bye. Ah, these people sneaking in under the wire of two calls in 1 hour. Ha! Anyway, I can't answer that question because I don't have the George that has the temperature setting. So we will have to see what anyone else has to say. How do you make the George Foreman temperature setting accessible? I don't know the answer to that one. So when we come back on Sunday, October 2nd, it will be my birthday, my actual honest to God given day I was truly born. And so I got to sort of try to come up with some kind of a wild and crazy party show to have. And if you've got any ideas for something, please let me know. You can always reach me at Marlena, M-A-R-L-A-I-N-A. At acbradio.org. We may do that party deal in the second hour and try to have a coherent guest in the first hour and second hour, pop the cork and cut the cake and have my birthday with me. That'll be kind of fun. I've done radio shows on ACB's birthday, but I've never done an ACB radio show on my birthday. So that'll be kind of a twist in the deal. And if anybody knows how to set the George Foreman temperature grill, the George Foreman temperature control on the George Foreman grill, let me know, because mine doesn't have that. So we need to know about that as well. And as I was saying earlier, I was kind of trying to think about what's going on in the Lieberg house this week to kind of catch you all up on. My remodel of the house is done for all intents and purposes. We still need some shelves and a couple of glass doors here and there, but we're getting there. We're getting there. Glass doors on the cupboards, that is. We've got all the doors to the house. And so it's been a real interesting experience being a blind person going through a remodel from the drawing stages to the finished stages. And let me tell you, there's a lot of stuff that goes on in a remod that a blind person, if you aren't really aggressively, kindly assertive, you would be left in the cold. It's real easy for, you know, sighted people to look at the lines on the paper and point and say, well, we're going to move this here and we're going to extend that wall 5 feet. And you really have to make sure that with kindness you say, hello, what are we talking about? This is my house and I want to know what we're doing. So that's been kind of a challenge. In the month of October, we'll have some absences. I'm sorry to tell you. Because we do, Gary the Board Guy and I do manage an adaptive technology company called Blinksoft, and we will be traveling we'll be traveling actually most of the month of October. So we will be here on the 2nd. On the 9th, I will be back in Washington, D.C., traveling back to Washington, D.C. for the Russell Smith Memorial, which I'm going to try to get some audio from, if permitted. And then the 16th, we will be in Montana. And the 23rd, we will be coming back from the Washington Council of the Blind convention. So it's a busy, busy October for us, but we're gonna try to do as many shows as possible. And when I can't be here, I'm sure Dave will, as I say, play something that will work. I am kind of running out of wherefores and whyases, and it's getting somewhat close to time here. We've got a couple of minutes left, but one thing I would truly, in all sincerity, like to ask of you, and that is that I need your help. I struggle at times to try to bring to you fresh ideas for guests in the first hour. And I sometimes go right up till the last minute before an idea will come to me or I can confirm someone. And I say it in the promo, but I'm really going to take some extra time here to ask you directly. If you have ideas for someone you would like to see interviewed on this program, they don't have to be blind. They don't even have to be doing blind things, but it does need to be of general interest and of some degree of benefit to people who are blind or partially sighted. But if you've got ideas, drop me a note and give me an idea, and hopefully give me an idea with a lead to contact the person. And that's pretty much all I need. And given that, I can move forward from there. So the email address for me is marlena@acbradio.org. And I check that daily. And so please feel free to, even if you're not sure if you, you know, maybe you're not sure it's a good idea. The only bad idea is the one that you don't express. So please, you know, feel free to give me some thoughts and let me know who you might like to see. And with that, we're going to get ready to wrap it up here. The dinner is done. It all smells delicious. I will see you for my birthday bash on Sunday, October 2nd. So please join me, won't you? Until then, stay safe, guys, and keep listening to ACB Radio. You've been listening to Marlena on ACB Radio. We'll be back next week, same time, same place. But in the meantime, if you've got an idea for a future show, why not drop me an email? The email address is Marlena, that's M-A-R-L-A-I-N-A, @acbradio.org. Thanks to Dave Williams, director of ACB Radio, and most of all, thanks to you, the listener. See you next week.